This podcast is brought to you by Luca Mele, front-end architecture, team leadership, and technical consulting. Over 16 years of experience turning complex challenges into simple, effective solutions. Learn more at lucamele.ch.
Imagine you're part of a team building a multi-million dollar e-commerce platform for, you know, a massive national retailer.
Okay, high stakes.
Right, very high stakes. And you decide to strictly follow every single rule in the official manual of your chosen web framework. You just like do everything by the book.
Implementing the absolute industry gold standard recommendations.
Exactly. But then the result is a website that is so painfully slow and unresponsive that it actively drives your customers away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, costing the company money with every sluggish click. And well, that is the reality of what happens when a so-called best practice stops being a helpful guide and actually becomes a straitjacket.
It is a terrifying scenario, honestly, but it's incredibly common. And not just in software, but across every industry.
Really, like everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we seek out these industry standards because they feel safe, right? Hmm. The phrase itself, it's a best practice, it carries this aura of undeniable authority.
It's like a shield.
Exactly. It absolves us of the responsibility of having to figure things out ourselves. If things go wrong, well, we follow the manual, so, you know, it isn't our fault.
Right, right. Which brings us to today's source material for this deep dive. We're looking at this highly provocative piece by front-end developer Luca Mele.
Yeah, forget best practices, invent your own.
That's the one. And our goal today is to unpack why blindly following the accepted rules of your industry might actually be sabotaging your work. We're going to look at the psychological trap of cargo culting.
Which is such a fascinating concept.
It really is. And we're going to explore how teams can shift from just following instructions to, well, building a personalized playbook that actually works for their specific unique reality.
Because to understand why a best practice can ruin a project, we first have to really define what a best practice actually is.
Right. And Luca points out a fundamental misconception we all seem to share about this, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. We tend to treat a best practice as if it were a law of physics, like something absolute and unchanging.
Like gravity.
Right. But if you strip away the mystique, a best practice is really nothing more than the distilled experience of a group of professionals who encountered a specific problem under specific constraints.
And they found a solution that worked for them.
Exactly. For them. The critical and usually ignored variable there is context.
So it's basically like borrowing a friend's prescription glasses because they tell you, hey, these glasses give me flawless 20/20 vision.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. And because the glasses are technically a perfect solution, but for their specific astigmatism, their specific focal length.
Their unique eyes.
Yeah. If you put those same glasses on, they aren't going to help you see clearly. They're just going to give you a massive headache because your eyes are dealing with an entirely different set of constraints.
And when we force those glasses onto our own faces in the workplace, we're falling victim to what formal logic calls the appeal to authority fallacy.
Okay, unpack that a bit. What does that look like in practice?
Well, Luca mentions he sees this constantly when debating system architecture with other engineers. Someone proposes a design, and when asked why they chose it, the defense is simply because the framework documentation says so.
Or like, because Google does it this way.
Yes, but that isn't an argument.
No, it's citing a textbook to avoid making an argument.
Precisely.
Yeah.
In logic, the appeal to authority is when you claim something is true just because an expert or an authority figure said it, completely bypassing the actual reason.
Like if the why.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the context of building a product, the moment your defense for a technical decision boils down to because the manual told me to, you've crossed the line from engineering into blind following.
And Luca connects this directly to that phenomenon you mentioned earlier, cargo culting.
Right.
Which is such a wild historical concept for you listening who might not know the origin. It actually goes back to the Pacific Islands during and just after World War II.
Yeah, it's a crazy story.
The U.S. military set up these massive temporary bases on these remote islands. And suddenly, the indigenous populations saw airplanes dropping massive amounts of cargo like food, medicine, equipment.
Unbelievable wealth. Just falling from the sky.
Yeah. But then the war ended, the military packed up, and the plane stopped coming.
And the islanders, wanting the cargo to return, began replicating the exact behaviors they had observed from the soldiers.
Right. They carved wooden headphones to wear.
They built control towers out of bamboo, and they marched in formation on abandoned dirt runways.
It's incredible. They perfectly replicated the form, the outward motions of the system, but they fundamentally lacked the underlying understanding.
Yeah, they didn't know about the global supply chain or radio frequencies or aviation mechanics that actually caused the planes to arrive.
They were doing the dance, but they didn't know why the dance was invented.
Exactly. And Luca is arguing that when a small startup copies the exact server architecture that a behemoth like Netflix uses, just because it's a best practice.
They're building a bamboo control tower.
Yes. They're copying the form without understanding that Netflix's solution was designed for a scale and a set of constraints that the startup simply does not have.
Because if you take a solution built by thousands of engineers dealing with millions of requests per second,
and you apply it to a project with 3 developers and 500 users, you aren't being rigorous. You're just cargo culting.
You skipped the crucial step of evaluating whether their context matches your reality.
Exactly.
But wait, let me push back on this a little. If thousands of the smartest developers at massive tech companies all agree on a certain practice, questioning it feels like incredible hubris.
I hear that. It feels arrogant.
Right. Doesn't investigating the why behind every single standard practice just lead to endless debate? Like, wouldn't it slow everything down to a crawl?
It's a valid concern.
Yeah.
And Luca isn't suggesting we throw away the collective wisdom of the industry. Best practices are genuinely valuable.
Okay, so they aren't useless.
No. Not at all. But they are a starting point, not the finish line. The breakdown happens when a team stops it. It's a best practice. You always have to ask the follow-up question.
Is it the best practice for us?
Exactly. And to see what happens when a team fails to ask that question, we can look at that case study Luca shares from his own career.
Oh, the Swiss retailer.
Yeah, involving a major Swiss retailer.
This is where we see the straitjacket in action, right?
Mm.
Because Luca was working with a team building an e-commerce application for this retailer using Next.js.
Which, for context, is currently one of the most dominant web frameworks in the world.
Right. And the team decided to adhere strictly to the Next.js documentation's primary best practice recommendation, which is a server-first approach.
Okay, let's break down the mechanics here. A server-first approach means that when a user visits a web page, the heavy lifting of building that page happens on a powerful server sitting in a data center somewhere.
So the user's computer isn't doing the hard work.
Right. The server constructs the fully formed page and then sends it down to the user's browser. Now, the documentation recommends this for a very good reason.
It's not just a random rule.
No. For about 80% of the web, things like blogs, news articles, or the public product pages of a store, this approach is fantastic.
Because it helps with search engines, right?
Yes. It allows search engines like Google to easily read and index the content, which massively boosts SEO. Plus, it allows the server to cache the page.
Meaning it saves a copy?
Exactly. It saves a fast copy to serve to thousands of different visitors without rebuilding it every time.
Okay, so the team read the manual, saw that server first was the default best practice, and they applied it universally across the entire application.
Including the shopping cart and the checkout flow.
Which sounds like a nightmare. This meant that every single micro interaction a user had with their cart required a round-trip ticket to that distant server.
Think about the mechanics of a shopping cart. If you click a button to increase the quantity of a shirt from 1 to 2, the browser sends a message across the network to the server.
The server registers the change.
It calculates the new total price, rebuilds the visual component of the cart, and sends it all the way back across the network to your screen.
And if we look at the specific context of a shopping cart, we can see exactly why applying this particular best practice was a catastrophic error.
Why is that?
Well, a shopping cart is inherently private. I mean, my cart has different shoes in it than your cart.
Exactly. Because every single cart is uniquely tied to an authenticated user, there is absolutely zero caching benefit. The server cannot save your cart and serve it to the next customer.
Because the next customer wants their own items.
Right. Furthermore, there's zero SEO benefit.
Oh, because Google isn't logging into my account.
Google does not log into private user accounts to index what socks they are planning to buy. So the two massive benefits of the server-first approach, caching and SEO, completely evaporate in the context of a checkout flow.
Wow. So by forcing this best practice where it didn't belong, they gained none of the benefits. They just inherited all of the drawbacks.
Yeah, every single time a user interacted with their cart, they were hit with network latency.
It just created a slow, frustrating, laggy experience for the end user for absolutely no technical reason other than the manual said so.
And you would assume that upon seeing this terrible user experience, a team of competent engineers would immediately pivot and fix it.
Right. You'd think they'd say, oops, this is slow. Let's change it.
But Luca's observation of the aftermath is the most revealing part of the story. The technical limitation wasn't what kept the team stuck. It was the psychological limitation.
The appeal to authority.
Yes. It was so deeply ingrained in the engineering culture that it acted as a shield against common sense.
Wait, really? They actually defended it.
Luca notes that it was incredibly difficult to convince the team to change course. The literal defense used in meetings to justify the slow cart was, but the Next.js docs say server components are the default.
That is wild. They were literally choosing to deliver a bad product to their customers simply to appease the documentation of the tool they were using.
It's cargo culting at its finest.
So did they ever fix it?
Eventually, they did break through that mindset. They moved the entire cart and checkout process to the client side.
Meaning the user's browser handles it.
Right. All the interactivity and state management happened instantly right there in the user's browser without needing to constantly ask the server for permission.
Let me guess. It fixed the problem.
Interactions became instantaneous. The code became simpler to manage. And just as you would expect when you finally understand your own context, they didn't lose a single benefit that the server-first approach was supposedly providing.
Because those benefits never existed for the checkout flow in the first place.
Exactly.
It's a perfect demonstration of context destroying a rule. But this brings us to a really tricky crossroads for anyone managing a project or, you know, writing code.
Right.
If framework documentation and industry standards can be this misleading when misapplied, what do we trust? I mean, are we just embracing total anarchy where every single developer writes their own completely unique, bespoke set of rules for every project?
That's a great question. And Luca is very careful to draw a distinct line here to prevent that kind of anarchy.
Okay, good.
He makes a crucial differentiation between framework-specific rules, which are highly contextual and must be questioned, and fundamental software design principles, which act much more like universal laws.
Oh, I see. It's like the difference between a local zoning law and a fundamental law of physics, like gravity.
Explain that.
Well, a zoning law, like a rule stating you cannot build a structure taller than 3 stories, only makes sense in the specific context of a certain town, right?
Mm.
Perhaps to preserve a historic skyline.
Highly contextual.
Exactly. If you take that zoning law and try to apply it to the middle of Manhattan, it becomes absurd and restrictive. Framework best practices are zoning laws, but gravity applies everywhere. If you drop a coffee mug, it shatters on the floor, whether you are in Switzerland or New York. Fundamental design principles are gravity.
That's spot on. And Luca highlights a few of these universal laws of gravity that he relies on. One of the most prominent is a principle known in the industry as yay and I over DRI.
Let's break those down, because yay and I stands for you aren't going to need it, and DRI stands for don't repeat yourself.
Right.
And Luca argues that you aren't going to need it is a far more important principle than don't repeat yourself. Which is interesting.
It is, because the DRY principle is usually one of the very first things taught in computer science. The idea is that you should never write the exact same piece of code twice.
Right. If you find yourself copying and pasting a function, you should immediately extract it, abstract it, and create one single universal function that handles both cases.
And on the surface, that sounds perfectly logical. But Luca states quite boldly that premature abstraction kills more code bases than duplication ever will.
I want to dig into the mechanism behind that. Why is abstraction so dangerous if done too early?
Think of it like building a highly elaborate, custom-designed closet organizer system before you've actually purchased any of your clothes.
Okay, I can picture that.
You build 20 specialized slots for silk ties, a massive rack for heavy winter coats, and a tiny drawer for socks. You've abstracted a perfect storage solution based on an assumption of what you might need.
Right.
Then you move in. And it turns out you work from home in a warm climate, and you only own t-shirts and shorts. You're now stuck with a rigid, immovable structure that doesn't fit your actual reality.
You're fighting the structure you built. In software, if you build a complex abstraction to handle 10 hypothetical future edge cases, and then the business requirements change, you're trapped.
Exactly. When the 11th completely unexpected edge case arrives, your perfectly abstracted code is so tightly knotted and interdependent that you have to tear the entire system down just to make a simple change.
Yikes. So YMU aren't going to need. It is the universal principle of waiting.
Waiting until the absolute last responsible moment to build a complex abstraction. You accept a little bit of messy duplication early on because duplication is incredibly easy to delete or change later.
Because it's not tangled up with everything else.
Right. Abstraction is rigid and hard to untangle. Luca notes that relying on YEGI has never failed him. Regardless of whether he is building a tiny startup app or massive enterprise software, it is gravity.
And he applies a similar universal thinking to the concept of dependencies, right?
Yes. A dependency is any external package of code written by a third party that you bring into your project to save time.
The analogy here is like hiring a general contractor to build a house, and they decide to subcontract the plumbing to someone else.
Who then subcontracts the sourcing of the pipes to a completely unknown supplier just to save a few dollars.
Right. You didn't install the pipes, but when one of them inevitably bursts, it's your house that floods.
In modern development, when you tell your system to install a single external package, you are often unknowingly downloading hundreds of nested dependencies written by complete strangers.
Which is terrifying. And Luca calls every single dependency a liability.
It is not a helpful shortcut. It is a vector for security vulnerabilities, bugs, and technical debt that you are now responsible for maintaining.
So the universal principle is keeping your dependency tree as lean as absolutely possible.
Always. So principles like YAGNI, keeping dependencies lean, and separating your business logic from your user interface. These are the laws of gravity.
They are rooted in the fundamental nature of building sustainable systems, entirely independent of whatever flashy new tool is currently dominating the market.
Which leads us to the most critical part of Luca's thesis, the practical application. Understanding the difference between zoning laws and gravity is great in theory, but how does a team actually operate under this philosophy on a daily basis without descending into chaos?
Yeah, that's the real challenge.
His ultimate takeaway regarding leadership is that the most effective, high-performing teams do not follow best practices. They have their own practices.
They build their own playbook. But practically speaking, what does this look like for the listener managing a team right now? I mean, if we aren't just following the manual, do we have to act like forensic investigators during every single sprint planning meeting?
Debating every minor technical choice.
Yeah, it sounds exhausting.
It requires a profound shift in how a team communicates, moving from a culture of compliance to a culture of critical thinking.
Okay.
Luca frames technical leadership not merely as writing the most elegant code, but as creating the environmental conditions where engineers can process industry wisdom through the filter of their own judgment.
So instead of a developer saying, we should use a server-first architecture because the Next.js docs say it's best, how does that conversation actually play out in a healthy team?
In a healthy team, leadership establishes guardrails for the debate so it doesn't drag on endlessly. You start by defining your specific constraints.
Like, what is the actual problem we are solving today?
That's exactly. Is our biggest constraint server cost? Is it time to market? Is it a highly interactive user experience? Once the constraints are defined, you look at the industry best practice through that specific lens.
Ah, I see.
You decide with arguments, not with authority.
You force the team to articulate the why.
Yes. And then, crucially, you write it down. You create an architecture decision record. Or an internal request for comments document.
So there's a paper trail.
You explicitly document. We looked at the industry standard. We realize our context is different because of X, Y, and Z. Therefore, we are choosing to do it this way.
And that documented decision then becomes your company's internal practice. It is a living playbook based on your actual reality, not a hypothetical reality imagined by a framework developer sitting in an office in San Francisco.
Deciding with arguments, not authority.
It strips away the safety blanket, but it forces you to actually do the job of engineering. So, to summarize our deep dive today for you listening, we've seen that industry best practices are incredibly valuable, but they are just the distilled experience of other people operating under different constraints.
We explored how the appeal to authority leads straight into cargo culting building bamboo control towers. Because we don't understand the underlying mechanisms.
We saw how failing to evaluate context absolutely ruined a Swiss retailer's checkout experience, all because the team was too afraid to contradict a manual.
And we learned that while framework rules are just local zoning laws that must be questioned, there are universal laws of gravity like YAGNI over DRY and the liability of dependencies that hold true across any system.
The ultimate goal isn't to reject all rules, but to create a culture where your team processes industry wisdom through their own engineering judgment to build a personalized playbook.
It is about taking responsibility for your own context rather than outsourcing your thinking to a piece of documentation.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over.
Luca emphasizes that premature abstraction kills systems, and every external dependency is a liability.
Right. So take a hard look at your own daily workflows, whether you work in tech, manage a business, or even just in how you organize your personal life.
Think about your dependencies.
Yeah. What heavily relied upon best practice or what external dependency are you currently carrying that isn't actually solving a real problem for you? What prescription glasses are you wearing that belong to someone else and are just adding friction and unnecessary overhead to your unique reality?
It's a question that might just change how you approach your next project.
Thanks for diving deep with us today.